to I Love That For You, the podcast celebrating the late bloomers and trailblazers of all walks of life. I'm Red.
And I'm Kelly. And Red, don't make me wait another second. Tell me all these stories. Oh my God, I'm dying. Let's go.
So you guys are going to have to listen to part one. This is our first ever two-part episode. We are talking all things Max Factor, but we are also talking about why my voice sounded...
Sounds like a frog.
A little bit, yeah. And that's because I went on my first date in Canada.
And shout out, he listens to the pod.
So he does listen to the pod. Yeah, sorry about that. I'm not going to give his name. We'll just call him C.
Hi,
yeah.
C. Thanks for listening.
Yep. Yeah, we should start that on our Patreon, like, eventually when we launch that.
Just get a date with Red.
That's not how we'll write
a song about you.
Yes. Actually, I love these options. But yeah, so we did not meet through the podcast. He started listening to it after we had met through Bumble. And he was actually one of the people I swiped on because, as I've talked about in other episodes, sometimes my classmates are swiping on men for me.
Your kiddos.
Yeah. I'm so proud of them. They're doing so well with everything. Like, and again, I don't know why I keep talking about them like this. I'm just really, really proud of what they're doing. And like... Just seeing them kind of grow, I'm just like, yeah, you got this. Anyways, so time of this recording, this was last night, so who knows where things will go from here. So we met up at a place called Big Trouble, which I love. Kind of like their, I guess it would be their version of like Chinatown.
Oh, okay, love.
So the thing was too, it was like the second floor of this building. And so there's not really a great signage for it either. Basically, I had to go, I got there first. And so I'm going up like this dark, creepy stairwell. And I'm like, great, this is gonna go so well. It actually was a really cool spot and it was really fun. And so we just got to talking and he is very fun to talk to. And no, it was just a very nice first date. He was very funny. We talked everything that you're not supposed to talk about on a date. Religion, politics. We talked about a little bit of trauma. We like met up,
topic.
Right? You know, just trauma dumping. No, it wasn't too much into that. We talked about our families. We talked about, you know, different social things that we're both passionate about. We have like different tastes in food. Like I, of course, I'm a seafood girl, but you know, growing up in Rhode Island, you kind of have to be. He is not a big oyster person, which also I'm like, that's totally understandable. Like, if you don't grow up around that, you're basically like, ooh, would you like to enjoy this snot?
Yeah, I'm with him, actually. I never really grew up with that, so
right.
I'm reticent to try one. Even I'm scared of like, I don't even have the allergy. I'm just scared I'm gonna like puke from.
That's fair.
Not prepared correctly, if you get bad food poisoning, I don't even fuck with it.
Right, and but we ended up talking until. So we stayed at that one spot and we went against all true crime advice, which is never go to a second location.
Yeah, wait, Red.
We did. No. It was fine because guys, there is no kissing and telling to be told because no, Red. I know. Because I mean,
what a letdown.
So we're hanging out there and apparently Big Trouble turns into a bit of a club.
Oh, you in the clubs lately.
Oh, it'll continue because basically we are talking and we're drinking wine and, you know, having a couple drinks and the volume of the music just keeps going up and up and up. And we're just like having this really great conversation, but we're starting to like literally yell to each other. And he has like some hearing loss in one of his ears. So he was like, is it okay if we go like somewhere else just to like go get dessert and we can actually talk? We end up leaving Big Trouble and we just pop into like this other random, I don't even know what the name of it was. And we ended up getting these two desserts. They're both Asian style. It was like sticky rice with pearl surprise. I was like, what now? Basically, it's like the pearl things in boba tea.
Oh, okay.
But then we also got in coconut milk these like balls of the durian. Durian.
Whoa, wait a minute. That stuff is the smelliest fruit on the planet.
Exactly. So
what was that?
It was actually really like funky. So for people listening, if you don't know what is it durian? Is that how you say it?
Durian, yeah.
There's a great video of, I believe it's Jimmy Kimmel. She opens one up and it is lethal, the smell. Oh. Granted, we didn't have that problem. because it was prepared and all the other stuff. But it is a weird fruit, that's for sure. Because it's like,
what does it taste like?
It tastes kind of like, at first it's sweet, and then all of a sudden it gets like savory, and then there's like this after, like, people who love it, and people who don't like it hate it.
Which one are you?
I was about to say it's one of the two, and then I'm like, oh wait, but I'm kind of in between. Because again, it was prepared in such a way that it kind of changes the taste of it.
Okay.
I still want to try it, like, just pure, like, straight from it, and also maybe not smell it, because apparently it smells like death.
Hold your nose as you eat it.
But the other thing was, too, I talked about her in the last episode, Giselle, who was one of my models. She's one of my friends. She invited me to go, after the date, meet up with her at this place called Saluna. I've written about Saluna before on my Substack.
Yes.
I've been there so many times. I don't know why I keep going back there. Kind of my spot, but at the same time, it's like a little too much for me. Like, it's a little too expensive. It's a little too loud. It's a little too, like, pretentious at times. Yeah. I think it's fun every once in a while, but I've been there, like, I've lived here 4 months, 4 or 5 months, and I've been there, like, 4 or 5 times. And there's other places to go.
Well, you have a whole city to explore, so.
Exactly. Exactly. So from 7:30 to midnight, the two of us were hanging out and talking, C and I, having like a really nice conversation. And then I was going to meet up with Giselle, and he was going to head home because he also had been out for his friend's birthday until 3:30 that morning.
Whoa.
And we didn't have this date planned. He was like, hey, I'm free. Just wondering if maybe you would be too. Because we've actually been talking for over a month.
Over a month and you just had a first date?
Yeah.
Wait, what took so long?
Girl, you know how hard it is with my schedule to get me to do this.
That's amazing that it even happened then, because usually it's like the interest wanes after like an hour.
I know.
So a month, you've been talking that whole time.
Yeah.
Ooh. So you've already been on like the equivalent of like 10 dates, I feel like.
Well,
that time.
But that's the thing. Now I'm like, okay, does he see me as date or does he see me as friend? Because then at the end of it, granted, it was fucking freezing last night. First day of spring, my ass.
Yeah,
it is.
It's still winter, I bet.
It's still winter. It is so cold that we have so much snow on the ground. And I, like a dum-dum, decided to wear just stockings and a dress with my winter coat. No. Do not sacrifice looking cute.
You gotta be comfortable. Were you freezing?
I was absolutely freezing. And so it would have been nice if...
See,
would have been warmed
on,
up, but no, but he gave me a hug and was just like, okay, like, and also I think he was kind of tired.
Believe it. That's fair.
Yeah.
My whole day has been destroyed because Sean had a gig last night past 10 o'clock. So.
Right. Then I end up going to the club and I'm dancing and we're having drinks and, you know, again, I'm yelling to be heard. I did end up dancing with this guy and it got like a little sexy. But then he like just walks away.
Wait, what? What does that mean? Does
like he walked away from dancing, no kiss or anything.
Like grinding and stuff?
Yeah. And he just walks away and I'm like, okay. And then he just goes and dances with someone else. And I'm like, okay then. And then he tries to come back and I'm like, no. What? No, I'm not.
How do we play?
I'm like, is this some weird like dancing thing in Toronto that I'm not aware of? Like,
it's a mating ritual.
You know? And again, I think I was feeling a little like, you know, I was kind of disappointed something more didn't happen with C, but again, maybe he doesn't see me that way. Me that way.
Well,
and again, by the time this recording comes out, it could be all over, or at the very least, I would like to be friends with him because he's great to talk to. He's a very interesting person. He's very well spoken and he's very smart. I'm very open about the fact that I consider myself, I believe it's sapiosexual, which is I'm very attracted to intelligence. And he seems very empathetic and very kind, which I appreciate as well. So while having a very dark sense of humor, he was talking about his family and like his sisters. Overall, I just felt really comfortable with him. But it's good first date for...
It was a good first showing, which I...
Yeah.
You. That's exciting.
Exactly. Thank you. And like, you know, we'll see what happens. I think both of us aren't really ready for something super serious right now.
Right.
Because again, my schedule, it took me a month to have a first date with
him. Literally. The second date will be another month and then
You're
done with your program by the time your third date happens.
Right. And I think he's just kind of enjoying his life and just seeing where things go. I think he got out of a relationship or something. So
I see.
I think he deserves to be happy. Not that he needs my permission, but you know.
A side note, I mean, I don't know if this is going to come out so late, but the call out for your wallet person.
Oh, yes.
Return your wallet.
Yes, so if you missed it from my Instagram or if you missed it from my Substack, basically what happened was I ended up losing my wallet. I was coming home from work and I was on the last stop. I tapped my wallet, which has my Presto card, which is what you use on the public transport to take the last streetcar home. And somewhere between tapping it there and walking to my place, I misplaced my wallet. I don't know where it went. I was panicking. The next day I had to Uber. A classmate lent me $5 so I could get to the bank and go sort that out. It was just all this awful stuff. And I was freaking out. My ID was in there. My cards were in there. Like, you can stop your cards, but like my ID from the US was in there. Cash, all that. This happened Monday night. I lost it. Wednesday morning, I'm in class and an administrator walked in with my wallet. Apparently some quote unquote cute guy in an orange shirt had stopped in, said that he found my wallet and wanted to return it to me. And they were like, oh, do you want to give it to her? We're all adults here. You know, it's not like school children or anything. But he was like, no, I just want to make sure that she gets this. All my cards, my IDs, my cash, my change, everything
was
still in it.
I told you, I got like my purse stolen at a Blink-182 concert. And then it ended up getting returned to Lost and Found, but they stole all the money. And like to get it back without anything taken is just insanity.
It's insane. But also, again, I live about by public transport, almost an hour away from my school downtown. I live out in the beaches and somebody somehow found it. Granted, I don't know if my wallet somehow still was on the streetcar and traveled and nobody picked it up. Like, the thing is, you could have picked it up and returned it to a police station. You could have dropped it off with the TDC. You could have just left it there, which I'm sure some people did.
You could have just taken it for yourself.
Exactly. And they did none of those things. And in fact, went into my wallet, found my student ID for the public transport because I have like a student pass one that listed where my college was and then brought it to my college back to me. And I'm just like, I want to know more of this story. I want to hear their side of it.
I want this man to be found. Like, this would be such a little Cinderella moment. I really hope you find him.
Yeah. So this is a call to action. If anybody has, granted, any of our Canadian listeners or if this person has ties outside of Canada and you just recognize this story. Also, it's kind of weird to know that somebody in the city has like seen all my IDs, all this other stuff.
So like invasive.
Could like look at me, see me on the street and be like, oh, that's the wallet girl. And I would have no idea.
No idea. Guys, help her find them.
Yeah. So this is a mission that we're trying to see if we can accomplish. Find this stranger so that I can thank him for what he did. And I don't know, get him like a drink for this.
Seriously.
Because that's one of the kindest things I've heard anyone doing in this day and age.
Literally, totally. It would never happen anywhere else.
No. And like even people in Canada were like, that's crazy. Because like, again, most people would turn it in to like to bring it all the way to my school. And like he was on the other side of the wall from me because where my classroom was. Where he brought it. It was right there. So I could have.
I wish you could have seen him.
My classmate saw him because we were coming back from like a break or something.
But like, I mean, sorry, at least talk to him or gotten his name.
Yes.
Or something. Yeah.
Just something. And to hear like, where did you find it? Because again, did the wallet travel to him and he brought it? Or was he in my area and brought it all the way downtown?
How cool would that be if he lives near you? And he's like, yeah, like your neighbor.
Right?
Oh my God. I hope that you find him, Ren. Everybody help her. This is the last time we all need and want in our lives.
Yes, it would be definitely like that movie moment, that Hollywood ending to like this story, just to know. You know,
literally. Come on.
Well, speaking of Hollywood, we are gonna get back to
round two.
So, quick refresh. So basically where we last left Max Factor. Actually, it was funny. When I did this project for the class, I was doing a voice, which I'm not sure if I could do it right now because my voice is shot from dancing and talking and yelling all night. But where we last left Max Factor was in Hollywood. He was building his story and he had just become involved with the cinema. So that's the best I could do in this condition.
That was really good.
Basically, we're now in about 1914 or so, and he had just come up with the flexible grease paint. So now actors and actresses are able to perform with their full facial features, being able to express themselves and all these other things. Max was basically the go-to guy to kind of create any signature look that films were looking for and basically help problem solve for anything that was happening within Hollywood. Basically from 1914 on till like the next 24 years, really. There's even a song called Hooray for Hollywood.
Oh,
have you ever heard that? Yeah.
Hooray for Hollywood.
Uh-huh. Na, 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 na. So there is a line in the song actually just about him, because again, he gets to that point where he's so well known that he says, to be an actor, see Mr. Factor, he'll make your kisser look good. That is basically his homage. One of his most signature things that he would create, because we're going to get into it, there's so many. One of the actresses, there was a comedic actress named Phyllis Haver, and she wanted to go like more vamp, more stylish. He basically created the first set of false eyelashes. But what's crazy,
and I am not.
Thank you. But the way he did it was much more tedious, because he would actually sew hair onto her real eyelashes.
I'm sorry.
So
what?
Really, it's almost like the first eyelash extensions.
That sounds painful, though.
It wasn't actually going into the skin. It's like being sewn within the hair.
Okay.
So it's kind of like, I believe he had to use like certain tools to be able to see so small, but kind of like tie knots and sew it in. Yeah, like exactly. But it would take like hours to do. But again, it's kind of like eyelash extension. So he's like the first person to do that. He also, because again, we're doing Hollywood classic films and stuff like that. Do you know who Rudolph Valentino is?
I know the name Valentino. Is it the same Valentino we all know?
Not exactly. So Rudolph Valentino was a actor. He was Italian, and he was more known for, I believe, like more of the silent pictures. He was nicknamed the Latin Lover because he often portrayed like, you know, I think he was known for like The Sheik was like one. However, because he was more of that Italian olive complexion, what worked for everybody else didn't work for him. He basically would complain to Max literally day in, day out. Just be like, hey, Max, you find me a shade yet? Like, do you fix my makeup yet? Because like apparently he was super annoying to Max. And so he spent days developing a shade that was going to flatter his skin tone. However, he not only accomplished that so that Rudolph Valentino did have this wonderful complexion on the black and white film, but he would actually coin the phrase color harmony. And that's because Max Factor would create entire lines dedicated to the most flattering colors to complement a person's hair and like skin color.
Oh, wow.
Basically, blues were for blondes, greens were for redheads, reds were for brunettes, and I think there was a fourth hair color called brownette, where it was like in between a brunette and a blonde. So it was like a light brown. And they were more... Yeah, exactly. So yours would be more of like a peach.
Like in terms of the color for me is peach?
Yeah.
Wait, I need to know this. This is good to know. I'm taking
notes. Right. Well, again, and like this peach. It's not to say like people can't pull off different...
Oh, no. I can't pull off blue for the life of me.
Well, I can't either. Like blue with like for me looks like it's not great. But what was the most complimentary per color harmony? And we actually study that in school, like what color harmony is. And it's about basically finding colors that kind of complement each other. And there's all these different theories in color theory about this. But basically, he was the first person to come up with this.
I need more peach in my wardrobe. Thank you.
I think a peach would look really nice on your cheeks.
Yes.
Like more of a peachy pink than like, you know, I don't think like a reddish one would do well. We have a joke in my class about please don't use blue in your blush. Like just straight blue. We're not saying like a bluish red, but like straight up blue.
No.
And if my classmate Sydney was listening right now, she would be laughing because every time I like ask her advice on something like, oh, what do you think about this? She's like, you know what? I think it needs more blue. Just to like sabotage me.
Just to sabotage.
But it's just always done in a very joking, loving way. So we're in like the 1920s now and we're doing films. But whenever they would put like lipstick on an actress, the lipstick shade would like start to run under the lights, basically at the corners of the lips. So Max Factor was the one who came up with the bee sting lip. So what that was, if you think of flappers, you know how they have like the tiniest little lips?
Oh, yes, I know what you're talking about.
He would put lipstick on his like thumb, and then he would press 2 points at the top lip, and then he would press his thumb on the bottom lip. So that would give like this little heart-shaped bee stung lip. Think like Betty Boop, where it's like a tiny little lip. By doing that, it kept the lipstick from going into the corners, and it actually made the actress's lips look very plump but small, which was the trend at the time. And so everybody started wearing their lips like this.
That's so funny that the trend is now that as big as you possibly can go.
Well, yeah. Well, because then he would expand it once panachromatic films made it possible, because that was when the lights were less intense. So that's where the Cupid's bow, which is Clara Bow's version, which is just a little bit wider.
Clara, got it.
And he would do her lips. So he's hanging out with Clara Bow and stuff like that. He was hanging out with so many different celebrities, such as Joan Crawford. So Joan Crawford, as we know, a little bit of a... What's the word I want to use?
Diva.
I feel like diva we misuse too often.
Personality.
I was going to go with bitch, but okay.
Okay,
let's go with personality.
That works too. I was being more diplomatic.
It is, this is, again, my opinion. This is not a fact, but obviously she...
documented in even FX's feud.
Yes. But when she wanted to go into more dramatic and mature roles, she wanted a look that would suggest that. So what he did was create the smear, which was like that. Basically, he overdrew the lips from like the top of the lip to the corner. So that basically it kind of always looked like she was almost snarling. So if you look at Joan Crawford, like her signature look, it was more. So we know now that it was called the smear. But back then they called it the hunter's bow lips because it looked like a hunter's bow, like for a bow and arrow.
Oh, yep. Yep. I see what you're saying. Yep.
Yeah. So it kind of looks like she's almost like giving you like sass.
A little bit.
Like
yeah.
without even saying anything.
Yeah.
So that was the smear.
It looks like the thing that like you would get when you get candy lips almost.
Right. Exactly. Like it's like that, that full lip. Like it looks like almost too much lip. So we go from like the exact opposite of like almost no lips to then all of a sudden. Yeah.
Huh.
Crazy, right?
That was quick. That was a quick, I mean, in a span of like a year or so.
No, we're talking from 1920s to 1940s.
Oh, okay, so this has been an evolution.
Yes, it's an evolution. Okay. But like that's what I'm saying. Like over these decades, he's creating iconic look after iconic look for each decade.
He basically defines, like, everybody catches up to him. He's the one setting the trend. Yeah.
Honestly. Oh, and we're going to get even further because in 1925, there was a film called Mare Nostrum. There were these underwater scenes that they needed, but they still wanted the people to look glamorous. So Max and his son worked for 6 days and nights, literally, like, without resting.
Jesus.
To create waterproof makeup.
Wait, he did that.
For the first time ever, waterproof makeup was created by Max Factor. This makeup specifically, granted, they would adjust the formula and things like that in the future, but hundreds of films for years and years and years would use this makeup because it was like the only ones that they had.
Whoa.
Right?
That's crazy. He did that.
Oh, even more? When filmmakers wanted a more glamorous, glossy appearance for lips in the film, he created lip pomade for the first time, which was later called lip gloss.
Max, you've done everything.
He did everything. Because again,
you find it.
I mean, as girls of the 90s and 2000s, where would we be without lip gloss?
Without my lip, I don't go anywhere without it. Like, yeah. I need it everywhere. I have it right in front of me right now. Like, it's how attached I am.
But that's where, like, and that's how far back it goes. Like, we're talking, like, this is, like, 1920s.
Oh, my God. I didn't realize it went back that far. It's crazy.
Right? Again, we're not saying, like, the lip glosses we're putting on our face now are the exact same ones made back then. I'm sure certain ingredients would definitely not pass certain tests.
Definitely not.
But at the time, he was just always trying these different things out, creating so many things in his lab. However, he needed to actually kind of expand that as well.
Expand even more than he already has? Taking over the entire thing?
Well, because keep in mind, right now, He's just doing this for Hollywood actresses.
Oh, right.
He actually had a quote that he said, which is, glamour should be within reach of every woman. Like he said in the last episode, like I told you, he was the one who said the phrase, you are not born glamorous, glamour is created. Ugh. So he just believed that every woman just needed the right tool and she could look just like any other Hollywood actress. They could look glamorous. They could look beautiful.
I would like to look like a Hollywood actress.
Right?
In the vein of Margot Robbie. Can that happen, please? I feel like even if I had the makeup, I couldn't do it. I couldn't look anything like them.
And trying to make it more accessible to everybody, in 1920, Max Factor coined the term makeup.
Wait, yes. It took that long to coin
it took that
doing?
Long because, wait, again, what we were, remember how I told you in the last episode how makeup was a verb? It wasn't a noun.
Right.
He also believed that he didn't want there to be this like classist discrepancy between like cosmetics and makeup. Like this is meant to be something that could be accessible to everyday women.
Oh my God. I can't believe that took that long. But
it took that long.
Mainstreamed it.
Mainstreamed it. So that's why they call him the father of modern makeup. Not only because of all these signature looks, but he literally was the one. And it caught on so much that everybody was kind of forced to use the phrase, because once Max Factor said it's makeup, it's makeup.
You listen to Max Factor, bitch.
Oh, you absolutely do. There is no denying that. He decided also he was going to make it accessible and prove this point by launching the Max Factor Makeup Studio. So basically, this is like the modern day equivalent to like a beauty launch, like a beauty brand launch. People will do
Kendall
like...
Kendall and Kylie do
yes,
it.
Yes, all those
yeah.
guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're getting it from him because he basically set up this like opulent place. Like, so the Max Factor Studio, this place was gorgeous. Like it's Art Deco style. And to prove his color theory, he actually made entire rooms specified for the different hair types. So there was literally a sign on each of the doors that was like for blondes only. And you go in and the whole thing was in blue and it was an actual working makeup studio.
Wait, does this still exist?
It's still there because you can actually go to the Hollywood Museum and they have the rooms on display. So Kelly, I need you to go.
What?
This is your homework. You need to go and see this.
Wait, it's in Hollywood, you said? I'm looking this up right now. Oh my God. Whoa.
So like the blonde's room. Yep.
Oh my God. Wait, this is iconic.
Right?
Holy shit.
But keep in mind, these were actually fully functioning studios for each of the rooms. Here's the other thing. Not only was he known for introducing the platinum blonde bombshell Jean Harlow, he did her hair. He transformed her hair, so we wouldn't have platinum blondes without Max Factor. And he would do that in these studios. So some of the people he transformed in there includes, I'm shit you not, from what I read in reports, Marilyn Monroe would get her blonde hair go from a brunette to a blonde in the Max Factor studio.
Stop.
He would transform Lucille Ball from a blonde to a redhead.
Red.
He had Judy Garland, Elizabeth Taylor, Betty Davis, all of them showing up to this place to get their hair and their makeup and all that stuff done.
Oh my God.
He's it's like the place to be.
Every icon.
Right.
What? This is crazy.
So the day of the opening, he had this very opulent party and he invited 3,500 people, like literally would send like wire over like personal invitations to people.
How very Kardashian of him.
Okay. Well, exactly. The Kardashians take after Max.
Yeah, literally. Oh my God.
But girl, 10,000 people showed up.
10,000?
10,000 people showed up to this opening because of the fact that so many stars were going to be there. People heard about this. This was a big deal. Yeah.
Iconic. I'm looking at these pictures still and like, I can't believe I haven't been here. Wow.
I know. You need to go and then you need to send pictures and post them to the gram because obviously.
I really want to go. Oh my God. Red.
I'm making this a homework assignment for you.
I know.
Not only were they doing, obviously, some of the most glamorous makeup and glamorous looks, but they would also start voyaging into special effects makeup. In particular, Max Factor was responsible for designing Boris Karloff's look for Frankenstein in 1931.
Oh, my God, the hits just keep coming.
He's doing everything. That's why he's such an icon.
Let somebody else do something. Come on now. Making this all look bad.
There's also apparently some scandal where I was trying to get more information about it, but I couldn't really find more. Apparently, he had used body paint on a cabaret dancer. So all she had on her body was a drawing of a zipper.
What?
Like, she was covered, but it was like a zipper body painted onto her as though you were going to unzip her.
Oh, that's so funny.
So it was super scandalous at the time.
I like that.
Yeah. I was trying to find images of it, and I just couldn't find anything. Because, again, we're talking like 1920s, 1930s, and I'm sure any photos that existed were probably too scandalous. I'm sure they exist somewhere, but I would love to know what I would have killed to have been there in those days, you know?
Oh my God, Red. You should have been around at that time.
I know. This was my time. I'm so mad. Yeah.
Sean needed to be around in the 50s and 60s.
Like, I want, granted, vintage style, not vintage values. So I would not like to actually be there because, like, obviously. Yeah. So the Max Factor Studio also housed one of the most striking products he had, which was called the Beauty Calibrator. You're going to be like, what is this medieval torture device?
What in the hell? What is this? What is this? Red.
So this was a device he
created. It's also a beauty micrometer.
Yes. So beauty calibrator, beauty micrometer. Basically, this was used to measure the dimensions of a person's facial structure to within 1/100th of an inch. So basically, this would help him determine how to shape and, like, correct the face, like with makeup, to create the perfect shape face.
It looks like Pinhead.
Like, honestly, it does.
Like a bird cage Pinhead.
I mean, it looks that way, but the thing is, all those pins and everything, they're just moving bands. So the person inside isn't actually having, like, pins inserted. They're just having bands, like, move around their face. But the pins are used to move them. So it looks crazy, like Pinhead.
Yeah.
But as you can probably see in the photos, everybody looks fine.
Yeah,
because, again, they're not actually experiencing that. He does note, however, that despite all his years of using it, he never once found the perfect face, like one that whose measurements were just perfect, which is going to say, like, nobody is perfect.
Nobody's perfect.
We can make the ideal perfect face with makeup and stuff. But again, what that is just going to be determined by our own things. Nobody's actually perfect, which I think is a good thing to keep in mind with makeup.
Absolutely.
The store had makeup for everyone with the introduction of society makeup and pancake makeup. This is where we're starting to get into Technicolor film. It's actually really cute because obviously one of the first examples of it is The Wizard of Oz. And there are some very cute photos of Judy Garland, very young, in the Max Factor studio, just like watching demonstrations and all this other stuff. Like, she's in the background, right? But she's like not...
everything up as you're talking.
Right? It's so cute. Judy Garland, Max Factor. It is, like, adorable.
Oh.
Look at her.
Oh. Oh,
she's
so,
again,
so little.
She's so innocent looking. So, like, cute. You know. Basically, the demand from Technicolor films required a new type of makeup. One that would show up, like, with color and stuff like that. And not only did Max deliver once again, but he noticed that the actresses that were using the makeup for the shoot were actually taking the compact makeup home with them. Like, they were stealing from the set.
I would.
Obviously. So he was like, well, if it's so popular with these actresses, I'm sure this is, like, and honestly, it was more of his son that was convincing him to do this, because he was like, listen, if that's what they're doing, like, I'm seeing it on set. I'm still working as an extra.
chasing down wigs.
Right. I'm sure at this point, though, they actually had more people with the company who were actually assigned to do that. But basically, they decided to start selling pancake makeup alongside his other makeup products to encourage people to find their everyday beauty, just like the stars on the silver screen. So yeah, we're getting like that compact makeup sort of thing. Now, sadly, Max would not live to see the full future success of his pancake makeup or the incredible impact his brand would continue to make. There were two factors in his life at this point that led to his death. In 1936, Max was struck by a delivery truck.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
Did you not see that coming?
No, neither did he. That's bad. Granted, he survived, but was so badly injured that his son, Francis, or Frank Factor, would actually basically start taking more control of the company because his father just couldn't. And he actually also began driving him around from then on. Like, Max Factor stopped driving. Mm-hmm. He just was struggling so much. So what's crazy, Maeve, how she changed all the sons' names.
Oh, yeah, with Maeve, yeah.
Yeah. Frank decided to change his name to Max Jr.
Oh, cute.
So he became Max Factor Jr.
Oh, that's cute.
And so, yeah, he was basically like, okay, listen, like, this name needs to continue. It'll always be like Max Factor, that sort of thing. Then 2 years later, in 1938, both the Maxes are traveling through Europe. Max received an extortion note basically saying, if you don't pay this amount of money, which I wasn't able to determine how much it was. They said, basically, if you don't pay it, we'll kill you.
What?
Couldn't figure out who sent the note. There was a failed sting operation that was made to catch the extortionist. Basically, like, they made the money drop and they waited around to catch the person, but no one ever showed up and they got the money anyways. And basically, from the stress of it all, and 2 years earlier having been struck by a delivery truck, Max went to bed, shaken from the whole ordeal, and he never woke up.
Aww.
So we aren't exactly entirely sure how old he was, but he was somewhere in his 60s, and he passed away on August 30th, 1938.
Could have kept going for years. That's sad.
Honestly. But again, we're talking like it's 1938. Like, I don't think...
That's a good run, I guess, for then, but not now. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was funny. When I started my presentation, I made my paper into a newspaper.
Oh, fun.
And so it, like, I had it on the screen and like made the like noise.
Oh,
and then it spun on and I was like, this just in, breaking news. Max Factor, father of makeup, died at 60 years old today. It is August 30th, 1938. We have lost our great factor of makeup. But what was his impact and how do we know his legacy? Let's find out, and not using this voice.
Please tell me you did that voice.
I did that voice.
Oh my god. Please tell me they clap for you.
They were all like, oh my fucking god, Red.
Oh my god, Red. That should have gotten you 100 on that assignment.
Well, thank you. We'll see how I do on it. But
oh, you haven't gotten your grade yet?
No, because I literally, at the time of this recording, I only did the presentation like 3 days ago.
Okay. Well, you'll have the grade by the time this actually comes out.
Yes. So maybe I'll share with the podcast. Yeah. Maybe I'll share on the Instagram my grade.
Yeah.
As I said, Max Factor would leave this world, but as previously stated, his legacy still thrives today. Max Factor brand would continue to thrive. It not only introduced pancake makeup, like I said, but they also introduced pan stick makeup, which was like the more portable, concealable one. They make concealer. I'm actually just going to scroll through and talk through some of these from their site. In 1940, they made True Color lipstick. It basically would keep the true color without irritating the skin. And they tested it by the kissing machine, which replaced human kissers and applied pressure to artificially kissing lips covered with lipstick. So that way they could test it. I know. Like I said, 1947, the pan stick makeup. And basically it was the makeup that you could apply as easily as lipstick in less than 20 seconds.
Oh, wow.
They would do the first cream puff makeup in 1953. Basically, it was applied with a puff and it was applied like a powder, but stayed on like a cream. So it looked really smooth. Again, they did the first concealer in like 1954 and it was intended to hide blemishes, lines and shadows.
Amen.
And it was... Yep. And it was the first concealer offered in the retail trade.
That is my number one product.
Right?
Give me all the concealer, please.
I mean, they did mascara wand for the first time. They would offer so many different things and they would have future makeup artists come and work for them. I mean, Pat McGrath, if you don't like, that is a huge makeup artist right now. She got her start with Max Factor. She was hired as, granted, this would be later into the 2000s, but she was signed as a Max Factor Global Creative Design Director. That's how far it goes. I mean, so the company itself would basically be sold to P&G in 1991 for $1.14 billion.
Jesus.
With inflation, that's over $2.5 billion.
Rightfully so, I mean.
Right?
Most women or female presenting people use makeup, and I mean dry queens too, you know.
Right.
It's just like a,
it's such an industry.
Can't ever, yeah, be.
The thing is, you may have noticed, we don't really have it Max Factor anymore really in the US market. That's because they basically brought it quietly overseas and really closed it down in the US market. So it still exists. I think P&G was putting other priorities on different brands in the US versus others. So you could still get it over in the UK, which is why in 2004, Pat McGrath, who's British, was like, she's black and British. Like, that's a pretty amazing thing to have somebody of her caliber, like, as a creative designer, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So that was huge. But just because it was sold off to P&G, it didn't mean that the family business wouldn't continue to find its way to influence the rest of the family, even if they didn't intend it to. Mm-hmm. And that's because Max's great-grandson, Davis Factor, and this is a direct quote from a Forbes article, Davis Factor never set out to create makeup, but he would soon realize the essential needs he had as a photographer, and as though history was repeating itself, he began his own studio in 1990, and then 6 years later, launched a cosmetics line with the same name so that it would suit the photography makeup that he wanted. Oh. Kelly, you ever hear of Smashbox?
What?
Smashbox is the from Davis Factor, the great-grandson of Max Factor.
Oh my god, whoa!
Right?
That's crazy.
Isn't it crazy?
Smashbox iconic. I had no idea.
So, I'm just going to read the last paragraph from my research paper. In conclusion, the fashion industry owes so much to this Jewish-Polish immigrant with a crazy idea and mad scientist experimenting spirit. The fashion industry strives for iconic moments of striking fashion, and Max Factor created decades of them. The path Max Factor walked was one without certainty, as there were few who had even tried before. But the way he blazed it with his signature looks, innovative products, and emphatic belief that anyone can find their beauty with the right tool, Max Factor would pave the way for the next century of makeup artists, hairstylists, and so many other creatives. Makeup limitations are only what we allow them to be, so with the glamour we create, we can only hope to inspire and help continue the path Max Factor and other iconic makeup artists started for us.
Yes, queen.
So that, and there's still so much more to him. Like, there's so many little things. And I was like, I don't have time.
Part three.
I don't have time. Because he just did so many things for makeup.
He did everything.
He did everything.
The entire industry.
Right?
Damn, we love this for him.
Right? Oh. And again, I understand too, like, sometimes people are like, oh, here's the patriarchy again, here's this guy. But like, I think it was sometimes, unfortunately, it has to come from somebody who has that level of privilege. Granted, he is, again, a Jewish immigrant in the 1930s, 1940s. That is not a privileged position to be
not
in.
Not at all. Nope.
But being able to, again, from the last episode, stand up and escape prison-like conditions with the Tsar of Russia, then to move to Hollywood and basically transform things all for the hopes of, like, helping create, like, beauty in this world.
Oh, my God. And, like, so much to thank him for.
I know, but at the same time, like, I get why it's frustrating. But he was trying to elevate, while he wasn't in the most privileged position, he used the privilege that he did have in order to create this for other makeup artists. And allow for everyone to have access to this.
Yes, Max, we love you.
Yeah, great. So I mean, now I'm like, I want more Max Factor products, and just like, I don't know, I know,
me too, and I can't get them apparently. I have to go through you.
I will take a look around here. Like, I can't, like, thinking about it, once I was doing the paper, I was like, when was the last time I saw a Max Factor product?
Yeah, I haven't seen one.
Right.
Decade, at least.
Right. And that's because they, like, closed out in the U.S. So now I'm going to be, like, hunting around drugstores up here being like, okay, where's the Max Factor? Because I don't know if it was just the U.S. or if it was all of North America. But, yeah, they moved it overseas.
Choice on their part.
Well, P&G is not hurting, girl.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
You know?
Wow.
So,
yeah. Oh, my gosh. Red. A+. Amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. So,
see why it was two parts.
Yes, because I mean, again, we could have tried to squish this all in, but we figured we just want to see, like, what do you guys think? Do we like having the longer stories just put into different parts? Do we like having longer ones? Do you guys like sitting around for longer ones? Because again, we want to make sure that this is something that you guys are enjoying. So, some people like more of the bite size. Some people like more of the longer, nope, I'm going to marathon this. I want to go, you know? So
I think it'll be interesting. Maybe we do a poll, although I'd be scared to see the results. They're like, nothing. We don't like any of it. No.
Right. No, you guys have all been really great. And we've been seeing some real, like, support coming out now.
Yeah,
and
finally. Thanks, guys. Yeah. We're finally actually paying attention, or we feel a little bit more love. Thank you. Love it.
So,
see it.
Again, to steal normally Kelly's line, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe.
You said it to me.
Yep. But we're very excited, and we have so many more people coming up this year. Oh my God. If you guys, again, have any ideas of people you want us to focus on, don't be afraid to reach out to us on our Instagram, or you can email us at ilovethatforyoupod@gmail.com.
And join the Facebook group, guys.
Yeah.
You can message us there too if you want. I don't know. Have
There's
fun.
So many places to be in touch with us. So definitely do that. We'll keep you posted about all the things going on between research projects and crazy work things and maybe some dating updates. Who knows? We'll see.
Yes,
we'll
please.
See. I would like to see C. Get it? Get it?
Hey.
But on that note, thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you next week.
Yeah. Bye.
Love you. Bye.
Thank you for joining us on I Love That For You. Our theme song is by Vaudeville and used with permission. Our cover art is by Jenny Lamb, edited to the best of our abilities by Kelly and Red. If you want us to spotlight someone, have questions, or just want to say hi, email us at ilovethatforyoupod@gmail.com or join us on Instagram at ilovethatforyoupod to join the love fest and see what else we get up to. Episodes are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, basically wherever else you listen. We appreciate all your love, and if you want to help support the show, please rate, review, and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts. This helps us spread the love and reach more people. Thanks for listening. We love you.